Good morning, everyone. This wonderful music of Sunil's, which we just heard, this amazing invocation, is his introduction to Book 11, The Kingdoms and Godheads of the Greater Mind. Last week, we completed our study of Canto 10 of Book 2, The Little Mind. We found it very colorful, full of imagery that we were able to grasp and understand. This next canto may be more difficult for us. The kingdoms and godheads of the greater mind. But anyway, we will start. We usually start by reading ahead, and this canto has quite a long first section. So we'll read the whole of that and then go back to the beginning and explore in more detail. We'll start at the top today. Leila, would you read, please?
Page 160.
No, we're page 260, Book 2, Canto 11, Kingdoms.
There sees the limits of the laboring power, but being and creation she sees not he there. For thought transcends the circles of mortal mind, it's greater than its earthly instrument. The Godhead granted into mind's narrow space escapes on every side into some vast that is a passage to infinity. It moves eternal in the spirit's field, a runner towards the far spiritual light, a child and servant of the spirit's force. But mind too falls back from a nameless peak, is being stretched on the sight of thought, for the spirit is eternal and unmade, and not by thinking was its greatness born, and not by thinking can its knowledge come. It knows itself. In itself it lives, moves where no thought is more informed. Its feet are steadied upon finite things. Its wings can dare to cross the infinite.
Thank you. Doris.
Arriving into his ken, a wonder space of great and marvelous meeting called his steps, where thought leaned on a vision beyond thought and shaped a world from the unthinkable. On peaks imagination cannot treat in the horizons of a childless sight under a blue veil of eternity. The splendors of ideal mind was outstretched across the boundaries of things known, origin of the little that we are, instinct with the endless more that we must be, a prop of all that human strength and a creator of hopes by earth unrealized. It spreads beyond the expanding universe. It wings beyond the boundaries of dreams. It overtops the ceiling of life. So awakening in a luminous sphere unbound by thought, exposed to omniscient immensity, it casts on our world a great crown in glances. It speaks that outstrips the emblem of the hours. A force that strikes invincibly through time, it might that fresh the gulf twixt man and God, light that combat ignorance and death.
Thank you. Yes, please. Heather.
In its vast anger of ideal space, where beauty and mightiness walk hand in hand, the spirit's truth take form as living gods, and each can build a world in its own right. In an air which doubt and error cannot mark, with the stigmata of their conformity, in communion with the losing privacy of a truth that sees in an unbearing light, where the sight falters not nor wanders sore, exempt from our world's sordid fears, dreaming its luminous creation's gaze on the ideas that people attain in a sun blaze of joy and absolute power above the masters of the ideal throne, in sessions of secure felicity, in regions of illumined certitudes.
Thank you. Kim?
Far are those realms from our labor and yearning and call. Perfections reign and hallowed sanctuary glow since our secret selves are next of kin, a breath of unattained divinity visits the imperfect earth on which we toil across a gleaming un. A light falls on our vexed, unsatisfied lives. A thought comes down from the ideal worlds and moves us to the new model, even here, some image of their greatness and appeal, and wonder beyond the ken of mortal hope amid the heavy sameness of the days and contradicted by human will. A faith in things that are not and must be, lives, comrade, of this world's delight and pain, the child of the secret soul's forbidden desire, born of its arm with eternity. Our spirits break free from their environment. The future brings its face of miracle near. Its Godhead looks at us with present eyes. Acts deemed impossible grow natural. We feel the hero's immortality, the courage and the strength death cannot touch. Awakened limbs that are mortal, hearts that fail, we move by the rapid impulse of will that scorns the tardy trudge of mortal time.
Thank you. Raffaella.
These promptings come not from an alien sphere. Ourselves are citizens of the same. Eventually, we might colonize metal's night, but now our rights are bound, our passports void. We live self-exiled from our heavenlier home, an errant ray from the immortal mind, accepted the earth blindly and became our human home. Servant of ignorance and exile, the laborer from an unsure globe, captured and driven in life's nascent grasp, hampered by obscure self, treacherous nerve, it dreams of happiness gained and nobler power, the natural privilege unfallen God, recalling still its old lost sovereignty. Amidst earth's mist and fog and mud and stone, it still remembers its exalted sphere and the high city planted spoke, a memory steals in from in, from lost heavens of truth. A wide release comes near, a glory called, a might looks out in a strange felicity.
Thank you. Thank you, Lorraine. Thank you.
Is of inking self-made, meaning
parent voice from numerous lips, from the old shape, and with it a conscious channel of the God, and like a slender stream of musical thoughts carries the voices of the mystic sons, a heaviness it brings of whispered truths, their ruling in each bloom, honing the bosom of space, a laughter from the immortal heart of bloom, and the unfathomed joy of timelessness, the sound of wisdom's murmur in the unknown, and the breath of unseen infinity.
Thank you, Alice.
In breathing clarities of amethyst air, the chainless and omnipotent spirit of mind wounded on the blue lotus of the idea, gold supernal sun, timeless truth poured down the mystery of the eternal ray through a silence quivering with the word of light on an endless ocean of discovery. Far off, he saw the joining hemispheres. Meditations mounting edge of trance. Great stairs climbed up to unborn heights where time's last ridges touch eternity's skies and nature speaks to the spirit's now.
Thank you. So the canto begins with the lines, there ceased the limits of the laboring power. That refers to the previous lines at the end of the previous canto about these two sun-gaze demons high above our ordinary mind, the pure, the high-winged life thought and the pure thought mind. The laboring power which he's referring to is this little mind, the one that we are normally familiar with. So with that picture which we saw of those two sun-gaze demons looking down on all that is the limit of this laboring power of mind. But he says, being and creation cease not there, for thought transcends the circles of mortal mind. Thought is much greater than its earthly instrument, this physical brain that we have. No? The Godhead, the divine power which is crammed into the narrow space of the little mind, actually escapes on every side into some vast that is a passage to infinity. That Godhead, that divine power of thought, moves eternal in the spirit's field. It's a runner towards the spiritual light. It's a child and servant of the spirit's force. But mind, too, falls back from a nameless peak, a great high level. Asvapati finds that his being, his own individual being and consciousness, stretched beyond the sight of thought because he is living in the spirit, and the spirit is eternal and unmade, and not by thinking was its greatness born, and not by thinking can its knowledge come, the knowledge of the spirit. It knows itself, and in itself it lives. Spirit has the power of direct knowledge by identity. It moves where no thought is, nor any form. Its feet are steadied based on finite things, the limited things of our universe. But its wings can dare to cross the infinite without any limit at all. So Asvapati is able to move far beyond the limitations of the little mind. And we get this wonderful description, moving description of the higher levels. Poonam, you would read.
Kingdoms and Godheads of the greater mind.
You can start at light 20.
20. Arriving into his camp, a wonder space of great and marvelous meetings, called his steps, where thought leaned on a vision beyond thought, and shaped a world from the unthinkable. On peaks, imagination cannot tread in the horizons of a tireless sight. Under a blue veil of eternity, the splendors of ideal mind were seen, outstretched across the boundaries of things known. Origin of the glitter that we are, instinct with the endless mold that we must be, the prop of all that human strength in a creator of hopes by earth's unrealized. It spreads beyond the expanding universe. It wings beyond the boundary of dream. It overtops the ceiling of life's soul. Awake in a luminous sphere, unbound by thought, exposed to omniscient immensities, it casts on our world its great crowned influences. Its that outstrips the ambling of the hours, its force that strides invincibly through time, its mights that bridge the gulf twixt man and God, its lights that combat ignorance and death.
Thank you. Anybody has anything they'd like to ask about this passage which Poonam read?
Ken.
Our Ken is what we know.
What we know.
So what is beyond our ken is what we don't know, or what we can't know. So this new world is arriving into the ken, into the consciousness, the knowledge of King Aswapati.
We speak here of vision beyond thought. We have one of the great sculptures in Western art, is the Thinker by Rodin.
Yes.
And that's created in the beginning of the 20th century, 1903, I think. Was in some ways Sri Aurobindo aware of some of the work of that kind of thought, that the vision that takes us beyond the thinking, that sort of thought processes?
Yes, I think that the whole of Savitri is written from that consciousness. That's why he's able to take us step by step on this journey, because he himself has taken it. This is not theoretical, this is not imaginary. This is based on knowledge, spiritual, direct spiritual knowledge and experience. But of course, a sculpture like the Thinker can't be created just from thought. There are higher creative powers at work to bring about a manifestation like that, an image, picture like that. We are entering now, he is beginning to see the splendors of ideal mind. This is the creative mind that mediates between supreme consciousness and the different levels, planes of existence in the manifestation, kind of transitional world between Satchidananda and mind, spirit. So it's very interesting that Sri Aurobindo tells us in this introductory passage that here in this realm of ideal mind, Aswapati finds again his home, his origin. We'll come to those lines a little later on. But when Sri Aurobindo first introduces us to King Aswapati in Book 1, Canto 3, he tells us that he's come from another realm. And the mother has commented on this passage about these great beings who have gone far beyond human achievement, but who accept to re-enter the human world to uplift it and to help. She sees Aswapati as one such being. And here we can very movingly see what it means for him to re-enter his native world, the world from which he's come. And the poet says that the splendors of ideal mind are the origin of the little that we are, and they are full of possibilities, all the endless more that we must be, that we must become, and they are a support, a prop of all that human strength in us. Whatever achievements we do carry out, they are supported by the action of that ideal mind. It creates hopes that have not yet been realized by earth, and it spreads even beyond the expanding universe to other universes. It wings beyond the boundaries of dream. and it overtops, it goes way beyond the ceiling of life's soar. Yeah. And when we were reading about the powers of the higher life, the greater life, Shobindo says that it almost touches those ideal worlds, but not quite.
Soar,
that's what an eagle or a vulture does. They rise up apparently effortlessly.
And how would you place this ideal mind compared to over mind and super mind?
If I've understood what we read now some years back in The Life Divine, he speaks of divine mind rather than over mind or anything like that. And he says that this ideal mind mediates between Satchitananda, the supreme consciousness in the manifestation, and the divine mind. It's a kind of limitation of it for this purpose of creating mind.
Yeah, all the supermind, is it like, I don't know, kind of that series with this series, not that two different series of mind and stuff.
Yes. In some ways, we can say that it's equivalent to supermind, or to one of the three poises of supermind. But I hesitate to go too much into the... One would have to very, very carefully read the last three chapters of Book 1 of The Life Divine to be very clear about this. What is happening here is that Shobindo is showing this to us as a plane of existence, which is way beyond mind and life, and approaching heavenlier level.
I see he has that word "can" twice in this passage.
Which can?
The word "can," yeah. Yes. It's on the first page, and then it's the fourth line of that 1216. Hmm. And the word "wonder" is in each line also.
Yes. Would you read, Mark? No, I can. I think we can start at line 36. Oh no, we stopped. Sorry, you are right. We stopped at line 42, actually. So we can go on from there. In lights.
In lights that combat ignorance and death, in its vast endless of real space, where beauty and mightiness walk hand in hand, the spirit's truths take form in living bones, and each can build the world in its own. In an air which I mark, with the stigmata of their deformity, in communion with the losing privacy, of a truth that sees in an unerring light, where the sight follows not nor wanders thought, exempt from our world's exorbitant tax of tears, dreaming its luminous creation's gaze on the ideas that people in a sun blaze of joy and absolute power, but the masters of the ideal throne, in sessions of secure felicity, in regions of illumined certainty.
Thank you. Ambit is the area that you can walk around in its vast ambit of ideal space, where beauty and mightiness walk hand in hand. The spirit's truths take form as living gods, and each can build a world in its own right.
What does the word mightiness mean here? Beauty and mightiness walk hand in hand.
Powerful nobility, something like that. It's a combination of two or more ideas. Might is strength. Mightiness is that quality of vastness and nobility and benevolence, even. There's an air which doubt and error, they are such important characteristics of our own world. They're even the tools by which we learn and grow. But in that air, doubt and error cannot leave the mark, the stigmata. It's a lasting mark of suffering, of their deformity. Stigmata, it's the word that's used in the case of mystics who, by their identification with the sufferings of Christ, they develop the scars of the cross on the hands and the feet, maybe the wound in the side also. Stigmata. A stigma is a mark of disgrace, actually, but when we use the word stigmata, it has more this mystical sense of identification with the sufferings of the avatar. But he says he couples it with deformity, with distortion. So error and doubt, which are so prevalent in our world, which are so important and useful to us, nevertheless, compared with that ideal world of perfect form and conception, they bring about deformity.
I'm trying to comprehend the Spirit's truths, which take form within us.
We were reading about that on Wednesday, no? There's something in the human mind that says, oh, what is formless can't take form. But he told us that that's in fact what's happening all the time. That the Spirit embodies itself. So the Spirit's truths, they can take form, they can take shape. We could perhaps in trance and dream see them, communicate with them. They take form as living gods. And each of those living gods has the right, the power, to create a world according to their own vision and intention, will. That's one of the characteristics of the overmind gods. They, each of them can create their own world, their own universe.
Mm.
So this next sentence is speaking about the masters of the ideal. There are high-ranking beings in that realm, seated on thrones. There they are seated. They sit in sessions. They reign sitting down. Sessions of secure felicity in regions of illumined certitude. Because they are free from the stigmata of deformity. They are in communion. They are communicating with some deep, private, inner world of a truth that can see in an unerring light in which there are no deformities or imperfections or shadows. An unerring light where the sight falters not and thought doesn't wander, and that realm, that air, is exempt from our world's exorbitant tax of tear. Here in Oroville, certain donations that are made are exempt of tax. There's something about living in our world where we have to pay this tax of suffering. But Sri Aurobindo says it's exorbitant, it's really far too much, out of proportion, complete. And that is why Mother and Sri Aurobindo are laboring to change that. There shouldn't be this exorbitant tax of tears. Dreaming, its luminous creations gaze on the ideas that people eternity. These ideas, these concepts, these perfect forms which become the models on which everything that is manifested is based. This idea comes from Plato. Yes. So, Dania, are you too busy or would you like to read?
There's a tendency to read this one line above the masters, but we have to pause even though there's not a comma there.
Okay. It's above. The masters above, of the ideal rule above there. Yeah. Yes, and they are throned above. Yes, in their session. Thank you, Patty. Yes.
What is throne?
Sorry? Throne. A throne is the seat that a king or a ruler sits on. Here it is used as a verb.
Yeah, and what is?
It means they sit throned. They are ruling from their thrones. He even says it's sessions. Sessions are when important.
What is the subject?
The masters of the ideal. If we want to. They are thrown, it's a verb. Yeah. They are throned or they sit throned. Yeah. I think he uses the word thrown in another place in the poem in the same way as a verb. It's one of these things that the English language allows and which Sri Aurobindo and other poets take full advantage of. There's one place in Savitri where he uses the word cathedral as a verb. Yeah, to cathedral light, so to create a huge sacred space for light, in which light is worship. Yeah. It's an obstacle, a trip for translators. It's a test, even a litmus test for translators. Do they notice what he's doing? Yeah.
Line 55?
Yes, please, yes.
In a sound blaze of joy, an absolute form, above the nostrils of the idol room, in sessions of secure felicity, in visions of divine statue, all are those realms, come on river and early and fall. Perfection reigns, and a hallowed sanctuary close to the uncertain thoughts of human mind, remote from the turbid trade of mortal life, since our secret selves are next of him, a breath of unattained divinity. Visit the imperfect hour on which we climb, across the gleaming river's golden brow, right falls on our vexed, unsatisfied life. Thought comes down from the ideal world and moves us to a new model even here. Some days of their greatness and appeal, and older beyond the theme of mortal hope, amid the heaviness of the day, and contradicted by the human law, the faith in things that are not and must be, lives from
lives.
Comrade of this world's delight and pain, the child of the secret soul's forbidden desire, born of its amour with eternity.
Thank you. This is so encouraging, isn't it?
Just not tears. Not just tears.
Not only tears, no? Yes. Of course, those realms are very far from our labor. We can't reach them. And our yearning, we long for them, we call for them. They're far away from that. They have the reign of perfection, the hallowed sanctuary of perfection, sacred refuge, which is closed to the uncertain thoughts of our minds and remote, very far from the turbid tread of mortal life. Turbid means troubled, disturbed, confused. But even though they are far, our secret self are closely related to those worlds. Next of kin, brothers, sisters, very closely related, sons or daughters. No? Because our secret self are next of kin, a breath of unattained divinity visits the imperfect earth on which we toil. Something comes there, comes from there to us. A light across a golden ether's, a gleaming ether's golden laugh. It's full of delight, that ether. A light falls on our vexed, unsatisfied lives, our troubled, anxious, unsatisfied life. A thought comes down from those ideal worlds, and that thought moves us to try to new model, even here in this world, some image of the greatness and appeal of those worlds, their wonder, their miraculous atmosphere, which is far beyond our ken, the ken of mortal hopes. We don't even dare to think of those, that wonder. So, in the very midst of the heavy sameness of our human days, contradicted by the human law that we live by, still this faith in things that are not but must be lives, comrade to the world's delight and pain. And that faith, he says, is the child of the secret soul, forbidden desire. It's like an illegitimate child born of its love affair with eternity. Would you like to read, Paula? Line 78, our spirits.
Our spirits break free from their environment. The future brings its face of miracle near. Its Godhead looks at us with present eyes. Acts deemed impossible grow natural. We feel the hero's immortality, the courage and the strength death cannot touch. Awake in limbs that are mortal, hearts that fail. We move by the rapid impulse of a will that scorns the tardy trudge of mortal time. These promptings come not from an alien spirit. ourselves are citizens of that mother state. Adventurers, we have colonized matters night, but now our rights are barred, our passports void. We live self-exiled from our heavenlier home, an errant ray from the immortal mind, accepted the earth's blindness and became our human thought, servant of ignorance. An exile, laborer on this unsure globe, captured and driven in life's meshy grass, hampered by obscure cell and treacherous nerve, in dreams of happier states and nobler powers, the natural privilege of unfallen gods, recalling still its old lost sovereignty. Amidst earth's mist and fog, mud and stone, it still remembers its exalted sphere and the high cry of its splendid birth.
The high city, the high city. But isn't it an amazing revelation, what he's sharing with us here? Just amazing. It's not only that there's this illegitimate child amongst us, which causes our spirits to break free from their human environment. It's not only that. We get prompted. We feel the hero's immortality and the courage and strength death cannot touch. It wakes up in our mortal bodies, in our weak heart. We get moved by the rapid impulse of a will that scorns the tardy trudge of mortal time, that can really speed things up. And he says, these promptings that come to us human beings are not coming to us from somewhere that's completely alien to us. We ourselves are citizens of that mother state, and we have voluntarily adventured to colonize this night of matter here. At the beginning of Book 1, Canto 3, King Aswapati is described as a colonizer, that he has voluntarily left this high state in order to colonize our world and help it to progress. So we ourselves, we have colonized matter's night, but because we've left our native plane, we live self-exiled from our heavenlier home, and whatever rights we might have had there are barred, and our passports are void. We come as representatives of an errant ray, a wandering ray, even a lost ray from the immortal mind, which has accepted to belong to the earth with its blindness, which has accepted to become our human thought, servant of ignorance. That ray is an exile, a laborer here on this unsure globe, captured and driven in the nescient, the unknowing grasp of human life. It's hampered by obscure cell, the only half-conscious cells of our brains and our bodies, no? And our treacherous nerves. He says they're treacherous because they give us misleading information. But that consciousness is dreaming of happier states and nobler powers, which are the natural privileges of gods who are still there, who haven't fallen, who haven't left to their higher state, recalling still its old lost sovereignty, its former status. It dreams of those happier states and nobler powers. And here it is, laboring amidst earth's mist and fog and mud and stone, but something still remembers that higher state, the high city of its splendid birth, its native home. We have all those layers of the little life and the little mind, but we're also carrying within us exiles from the world of ideal mind. And that's why I find this music of Sunilda, which we heard at the beginning, which we'll hear again at the end, so moving, because he has somehow perfectly captured this remembrance. He's found a beautiful mantra in his music. He expresses that memory which is lingering in us still. No, I've lost them altogether. Liuba, would you read? Top of page 263, a memory.
A memory steeped in the most heavens of truth. A light release comes near, a glory falls, and my looks out and is a strange felicity. In glamorous passages of halfway to light wandering, a brilliant shadow itself, this quick and sudden leader of blind boys, this tender of small lambs, this minister servant, tired by mind and body for earthly, forgets its work with true reality. It covers its renounced individual right. It wears once more purple robe of thought and knows itself the ideal sphere and king, communicant and prophet of the unborn, near to delight and immortality.
Thank you.
What is the leader of language?
This mind. Here it's an exile, no? And it's quick, it's very lively, but uncertain. It's leading these blind gods, these blind powers of here. It's tender, it's looking after small lamps, little lamps of light. It's a serf, almost a slave, working, being hired by the human mind and body for earth use. But because of that origin, sometimes when it's doing its ordinary daily tasks, it forgets its work amid crude realities and remembers something from the origin. A memory steals in from lost heavens of truth. And then it feels again that it's really an emperor. It's renounced imperial right. Wears once more a purple robe of thought, knows itself the seer and king of the ideal, communicant in communication with the divine, prophet of the unborn, heir to delight and immortality. That ideal mind is in us and has those aspirations and convictions. It's this particular exile from the ideal mind who is coming and working here in us. Yeah, exile. Yeah. And here it's just doing the work of the human mind. Yes, but something may be prompted to remember, no? And then all this normal kind of mind labor, it leaves it aside, it flies off to something else. No, it is the purple robe is the robe that is worn by the emperor, the highest ruler.
But I was just wondering why the robe of thought and of thought.
Sorry?
I'm not. Thought,
yes. Yes. Because he says this power of thought, actually, he said it from the beginning. Thought transcends the circles of mortal mind. The power of thought is a power of spirit, and it has access to infinite powers, actually. Moves eternal in the spirit's field. So here in us, the mind is a toiler, a laborer. No, but there is this higher possibility for the greater mind. Yes.
Your teacher probably would be using this capacity most of the time.
Right.
So that's what the disciple recognized.
Yes.
And they always mention that he has this air of royalty around him.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
That's like a real aristocracy.
Yeah, that's a
true aristocracy, yeah.
So at the beginning of Kanto Yenin, we read, he's being stretched beyond the sight of thought.
Yes.
For the spirit is eternal and made and not by thinking.
Yes, that's right. But on the third line, you've got thought with a capital T. Yes, and it says that there this power of thought goes beyond the limitations of mortal mind. And when he's speaking about the splendors of the ideal mind, that's on a much higher level, on peaks imaginations cannot tread. These splendors of ideal mind are seen. And that's the origin of all the little that we are, and a ray from that ideal mind has exiled itself to be here with us, to allow us to think, but it's carrying with it something of its original capacity on much, much higher level.
So that errant ray is not due to error as such.
It means wandering away from its own original source. Yeah.
It's not connected to error.
It's not erring in that sense. Yeah. Errant. You know those knights errant in the stories? They were not fixed in any particular place. They moved around to do their work wherever it was necessary. So it's more in that sense, an adventurer.
So here, instead of inheriting a political position as on a throne, you would become an heir who delights in immortality.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
In these three lines, I find...
Which three lines?
Great play, the word dreams and sleep. All things are real, but are here only dreams.
Yes.
In our unknown depth sleeps their reserve of truth. On our unreached heights they reign and come to us in thought and muse, trailing the roads of life.
Mm. But you can continue. Actually, that's where we stopped. Heir to delight and immortality. So you can please continue to read, Kumar.
But our dwarf will and cold pragmatic sense admit not the celestial visitants awaiting us on the ideal's peaks, or guarded in our secret self as unseen, yet flashed sometimes across the awakened soul, hide from our lives their greatness, beauty, power. Our present feels sometimes their regal touch. Our future strives towards their luminous thrones. Out of spiritual secrecy they gaze, immortal footfalls in mind's corridors sound. Our souls can climb into the shining planets.
Planes.
Into the shining planes that their breaths from which they came can be our home.
Yes, isn't that wonderful? It's our dwarf will and our cold pragmatic sense. It's so practical. They don't welcome in these heavenly visitors. So they're waiting for us on the ideal's peaks. Or they're hiding, guarded in our secret self unseen. But sometimes they flash across the awakened soul. They hide their greatness, beauty, power. But sometimes we feel that royal touch, that blessing. No? Our future is striving towards those luminous thrones. Out of spiritual secrecy they gaze. Immortal footfalls in mind's corridor sound. We just hear the sound of their feet approaching, perhaps. Our souls can climb into the shining plain, the breadths from which they come, these celestial visitants, can be our home. I think reading Savitri helps. And it's up to each one of us to live this knowledge as much as we can. Yes?
Is it possible to have, I really like this collective thing, is it possible to have a co-existence with another being and say that, look, make use of me and let's do things together? Do you understand what I mean?
I understand what you mean, yes.
Happened before.
Sri Krishna came and inhabited Sri Aurobindo's body.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Mm. He wrote that wonderful poem, Invitation, when he was in Alipur. Mm. Who will climb with me?
It's humanly possible.
He had to struggle with his own thoughts at that time, no? And that's how he got transformed.
We can say it's divinely possible. Mm. I mean, that would be a kind of ideal thing, no? Of uniting with a divine being, becoming divine. But we have to fulfill the conditions.
Would you mind talking louder?
I'm so sorry.
Both of you? I mean everybody.
Everybody. We should all... I'm sorry, Duriya. Yeah.
Thank you.
I would very much like to read just the next few lines, because it's the lines Mother reads, we can hear them. This is about King Asvapati. His privilege regained of shadowless sight. The thinker entered the immortal's air and drank again his pure and mighty soul. In this case, it's us for party. But there's a thinker in all of us that can have this experience. So shall we listen to this wonderful line? Victory. You can do two, three.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.